But it's always time to go exploring. Welcome to Outdoor Pursuits with yours truly, Jade Quinn McDonald. Can you guys hear me?
Yep,
we can.
Awesome. Okay. I'm here with two lovely young men, one of whom I've just met this morning, one of whom I've known for a couple years now, Britton and Tavish. Do you guys want to introduce yourselves?
Sure. I'm Britton. I'm a student at UBC. I study cognitive systems. And other than that, I DJ. I have a show on CITR. Promo. And that's it.
Yo, what's up? I'm Tavish, also a student here, UBC, Sauder, fifth year. Apparently a cyclist now. Never really happened before, but yeah, stoked to be on.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you guys are back in the academic setting, but this summer you were in the wild lands of the United States, but also Canada and a little bit of Mexico.
Yeah, a little bit of Canada and like Canada. An inch of Mexico. Awesome. And we were off the bikes in Mexico, really, okay. For the most part.
Okay. Yeah, so these guys just did a bikepacking trip from Banff all the way down to the border of Mexico and the United States. Long, long trip, many kilometers or miles, excuse me. And yeah, they're going to tell us a little bit about their summer. So first, I was curious if you could talk through a little bit of what inspired you guys and how you came up with the idea to do this trip.
Okay. I think the initial seed for the idea came from me. It was something I proposed to Tavish at work. Context, we worked together at the pit.
Nice.
And I was kind of just planning. I was really trying to create this plan for last summer that would just be pretty packed with fun stuff. So there was this two-month chunk for the second half of the summer that I was trying to fill with something cool. And I had always been interested in the idea of doing some long sort of grand cross-country trip. But I think the point that I'm at in my life and just like the kind of stuff that I like to do, doing that on foot wasn't really calling out to me. And I had never really thought about doing it on a bike until I was sort of contemplating this situation. And then I started looking and you see all this stuff and there's a lot of more road kind of, bike packing routes that are pretty popular, like
the beaten path,
the Transamerica and whatnot, and not to say the Great Divide mountain bike route, which we'll henceforth refer to as the GDMBR. Not that that's not pretty popular, because within like mountain biking bike packing circles, which admittedly are small circles, it's pretty well known. It's like probably the most popular Trans-American route that you can do on a mountain bike. Anyway, I don't know. I thought it looked cool, and that was the kind of thing that I probably would do alone, but it would be more fun to not. So then I was like, yo.
Yeah, how did you feel being approached with this idea?
Oh, I was honored.
Yeah.
It was never really like a big discussion or big plan or anything. He just kind of pitched it to me, and I was like, oh, yeah, that. Calling my name. I want to do something big. I want to do something that's, you know, budget friendly. And yeah, I started doing my own research and everything about it seemed right. So
wow. Yeah.
Got it done.
So who came up with the plan to combine the GDMBR and is it the
Western Wildlands route?
Yeah, that's the one.
We both came up with that plan like halfway through the trip.
Oh, no kidding.
That like was 2 days before we left
what?
The GDMBR.
Yeah. What
that was really
that?
Spur of the moment.
What did spark it?
You're
in like Idaho.
Yeah. Because
I know Moab is part of the Western Wildlands, is it?
It's a
so,
detour on it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So just to give everyone that's listening context. So the GDMVR starts in Banff. It goes through Montana, Idaho, like a little bit of Idaho, a little bit of, well, actually, no, a lot of Wyoming. A lot of Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico. And then it ends at the border in New Mexico at Antelope Wells. And that's it. It's, like I said, it's a pretty popular bikepacking route. Like when we were on the GDMBR, we were probably running into 3 to 5 other bikepackers every day.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some people that were we were kind of keeping pace with that we would see every couple of days. And, mm-hmm. and that was cool. But I think so what got the idea started initially for the Western Wildlands route bounce over thing was that I think you had initially said something like, oh, does this, like, are we going to go through Utah at all? Like, I've always wanted to go through Utah. Like, you had said that a couple of times, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
And I was like, I don't know, maybe there's some kind of modification we could make where we could see Utah a little bit. And then, oh, we were at the Llama Ranch. And that British couple.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay. So we stayed at this, we stayed at this place called the Llama Ranch. This was one of the coolest places we stayed all trip. So this lovely woman, Barbara, rewind about 20 years or something.
Mm-hmm.
And she lives in this little ranch home with her llamas. Right along the route, and she sees all these people on bikes riding by, and she's like, hey, do you want, you know, some water, it's hot out, some food, whatever, because she's a very generous person. And gradually that sort of snowballs, and she starts letting people, you know, tent up in the yard there, and she makes sandwiches for people. And mind you, she doesn't even bike pack. She's just mm-hmm. like a nice person.
Observing this odd phenomenon.
Yeah, she's like, what are you guys all doing? Like, what's this all about? Like, why do people keep biking by my house with all these bags and stuff? And then she got this guy, John, I think, sort of joined in on the project, moved into the ranch as well, and helped her build all these like tiny home things that they just offer up to bikepackers and through hikers as well. Because the route kind of parallels the CDT.
Oh, no kidding.
So you see a lot of CDT hikers as well. People can just stay there for free. And they're just so generous, and it's such a good vibe. And when we stayed there, it was packed. I mean, there was probably 30 people there.
At least, yeah. Because there's like 6 cabins. Those were all full. Tons of tents. But yeah, most generous people I've maybe ever met. They've got a fridge full of beers and drinks.
Wow. Like,
they give you a couple bottles of wine, sandwiches.
That's
crazy. Yeah, there was 2 bottles of wine in the cabin when we got there.
And what? Like, they like want you to stay too. They were like urging us. They were like, well, the record's 2 weeks. If you guys want to stay 2 weeks, live on us.
Yeah, they like brought it up multiple times.
That's so
was
interesting.
Like, oh, yeah, you should stay another night. Like, you guys should chill here. Just stick around, you know?
And you guys were like, no, we're going to Utah.
We did.
That was our first zero, right?
Yeah,
that was our first zero. It was kind of the light at the end of the tunnel for like the first 2 weeks.
Yeah. Wow. So that's where the concrete idea to switch trails came.
That's
about.
Where the seed was sowed, because we met this British couple who was going northbound, mm-hmm. and they did the opposite. They started on the Western Wildlands route, and they were like, oh, this is a little too deserty and kind of gnarly. Let's get over onto the GDMBR.
Okay.
There's going to be more people.
Yeah.
There's more amenities. There's more water.
Mm-hmm.
They were kind of full of complaints about the Western Wildlands. Like, they weren't selling it to us at all.
A bit too rugged for them, maybe.
Yeah, because is, I would say, significantly more rugged than the GDMBR.
Okay.
And the GDMBR is rugged enough, you know, so.
But yeah, then we decided to switch routes when we were kind of coming up to the Tetons. So still in Idaho, but kind of on the border of Wyoming.
Okay.
We're like, hey, if we get to Jackson Hole, we can kind of cut east and continue on the GDMBR or go west to the Western Wildlands. And there was just a lot of cool stuff on that route. Like, it let us see Grand Canyon, Moab, Glen Canyon, Bryce Canyon, a lot of canyons.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, it was
so
awesome.
Was there any like dead zone between the two trails when you guys
Yeah, we kind of had to freestyle that bit.
That's where a lot of the hitchhiking came in.
Oh,
play.
Cool.
Once we were kind of moving laterally, we were like, hey, we can kind of cheat now since we're not headed south. We're not really losing kilometers.
Yeah.
And we spent a day or two hitchhiking, probably got like 6 or 7 different rides, just kind of connecting the route until we got to still in Idaho, I believe. But
Montpelier.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Montpelier.
Montpelier.
Oh.
Yeah, that's kind of western town close to the Utah border. But cool. I met some incredible people through the hitchhiking. Kind of like added a whole new dynamic to the trip, which was super cool.
And when we were leaving Jackson, we had this whole plan. We had had a long day biking through the Tetons coming into Jackson, and that was a beautiful day. But we were also like, from that morning, we thought, oh, you know, we're going to get to Jackson, chill out, sleep there, because we figured, you know, we can just find somewhere in town, set up a stealthy little tent, and we'll be fine. But Jackson's not that type of town. It's bougie, ski town. Like, they don't really want the dirt bag crowd hanging around there. So we found out a little late in the day that that was not going to work out. So then we had, like, an hour and a half or 2 hours to sunset, and we were like, man, we got to bike over Teton Pass right now. So that's like the only way we're going to get to somewhere that we can camp that's like in the direction we want to go. And that was one of the gnarliest climbs we did on the whole trip, and we were like sprinting up it.
Yeah, I was delirious by the time we got to the top, like dizzy. I couldn't believe what we had just done. Like, it's not that it was a crazy long pass, it was maybe 6 miles, like 9 kilometers or so, but it was just like steep and intense. It was a good one.
It was like 8% grade for like the whole climb,
and that's just trying to get out of Jackson.
You gotta go up this big old pass.
But
then the ride down on the other side was pretty sweet, but it is a pretty sketchy highway that you're on.
Pretty sweet for Britain. Britain's crazy on the downhill. About 100 kilometers an hour, no hands on the brakes. Moving at turtle speed behind him, just like shaking on the highway on the shoulder.
Yeah, how much of it was road riding compared to trail?
In total?
10-15% road, maybe.
Okay, great.
Yeah, mostly gravel. Mostly gravel. And when you're on roads, it tends to be side roads. But there is the occasional stretch where, like, your only option is a highway.
Yeah.
Like, those kind of situations.
Right.
Yeah.
And is the Western Wildland route meant for biking?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes. But it is significantly less known and popular than the GDMBR. Just as dope, in my opinion. But, yeah, so like I said, when we were on the GDMBR, we would see about, you know, 3 to 5 people every day. Once we got on to the Western Wildlands route, and mind you, this is half of our trip. This was like the whole second half of the trip. We didn't see a single other bike packer on it. We saw like one bike packer that was like out for a weekend trip. But other than
that's insane.
I mean, we didn't see a single other person.
So almost a month.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Wow.
That's what made it cool, though. Like, I was pretty stoked on that.
Wow. Yeah. And that kind of terrain, the canyons and things like that.
Desert.
Yeah. I assume maybe you've been in that before.
Yeah. I'd actually never really been to Arizona much, but I had been to Utah quite a bit.
Tavish. Where are you from originally?
I'm from Vancouver, so I'm not really used to the whole Red Rock stuff. I had, like, briefly been down to Arizona. I was maybe, like, 14. But other than that, not familiar with the climate.
Yeah, what was it like to just be out of your element?
It was sick. I loved it.
Nice.
Like, especially around Moab or, like, southern Utah as a whole. It's, like, from another planet. Like, really incredible spot. Just the way those mountains are made, the way that rock looks, it was super cool. Because especially, you know, when we're in Montana, it's relatively similar to Was my mic on there?
No, it's on.
It's just quiet.
Yeah, Montana is like relatively similar to BC, right? So like, it's still beautiful, but it's not blowing your mind. But once you get down there, it was something different for sure.
Wow, amazing. So what was the bike setup like for you guys?
Gravel bikes as like the base.
So a hardtail.
Yeah, fully rigid. No suspension in the front. Some people on the GDMBR, they run like a little bit of suspension in the front, but you don't really need it. Yeah, so just rigid, yeah, gravel bikes. I was running like 45 mil tires in the front, maybe 47 in the back, which is definitely on the narrower side. Like a lot of the older guys with like the big cushy fat tires would like see our bikes and be like, what are you guys doing on those things? Like, but for the most part, it's fine. Like if you can handle the downhills, like the chunkier downhills on narrower tires, then you're fine. And you're honestly going to have a better time on everything else with narrower tires.
Yeah.
And then we had a bit more of a DIY kind of vibe in terms of the bag setup. 90% of what you see on the GDMBR and probably most bikepacking routes is like real kind of fancy, like all these, you know, bikepacking specific bags, like these the custom frame bags. And I would say the modern like bikepacking vibe, people have kind of moved away from panniers, and I'd say the most common is like big old frame bag,
right? Yeah,
big old seat bag,
okay,
handlebar bag, and like some feed bags on the bars as well, and then like two fork mount, you know, water bottle cages. Okay. That's like probably the most common setup that you see.
Right.
But all of like those, you know, custom frame bags and all that kind of stuff, they're nice. But they're also just kind of expensive and like very much one purpose in use. And you can fit just as much stuff on your bike with just a couple dry bags and some straps. So
nice. The rugged way.
Yeah. So we had pretty similar setups, like very similar setups.
Super similar,
Which was rear rack, big bag, big dry bag on top of the rear rack in the back, two dry bags on either side of it, two in the front, like one on either side of the fork, and then a handlebar bag, and then some feed bags on like the other side of the handlebars for, you know, snacks and phone and sunscreen and whatnot. Which for the feed bags, we used chalk bags, which works really well. I would recommend that for anyone, you know, that's trying to like build a little budget bikepacking setup. The chalk bags in the front are legit.
Yeah, mandatory.
Yeah, because you can cinch them down and everything. Like, they're great.
Yeah, that's ingenious.
Yeah.
So did you do any side missions that were non-bike related on this trip?
Kind of.
Yeah. Ooh, Woodward. We went to.
Oh, yeah. That was sick. Woodward Park City in Utah.
Oh, wow.
Fulfilled a childhood dream of mine. Always wanted to go to Woodward. So, yeah, I spent a day there with Britton's cousin.
Nice.
And strapped on the snowboard with wheels and jumped into the foam pit.
What?
Felt like a child. It was awesome.
Yeah, we just seshed the foam pit there. They have like a mega ramp into the foam pit.
Yeah, it's mega ramp into the foam pit.
It's kind of really scary, honestly. Those snowboards with the wheels on them are sketch.
Yeah, no edge.
Yeah, you just like point straight line, like you can't really turn at all, and you can't try to turn. And you, it flings you like 20 feet into the air into this foam pit, and it is a workout getting out of that thing. It's like crazy. You're fighting for your life trying to crawl out of this thing.
So, is this like a large mall? Is that Woodward?
No, it's like a skateboard facility, or like every extreme sport you could ever imagine facility. Yeah. It's just like this kind of indoor training ground, and it's at the bottom of their own kind of private ski resort slash mountain bike resort.
Yeah.
Super cool spot. There's a few of them in the States, but that's kind of the one to go to.
Whoa.
It's like Disneyland for kids that like to skateboard and snowboard and all that kind of stuff. So it, like, it's mostly known for like, it's like a camp.
Okay.
Like, kids will go there. Because it was kind of funny. I mean, we're there, And it's mostly just 12-year-olds that are doing, like, triple backflips and stuff. And then us.
Why can't I get this thing on edge?
Yeah.
And we were in there looking nasty, too.
Yeah, I was going to say.
We had, like, one change of clothes. Everything's just, like, sweat-stained. Like, totally brown. Yeah. Bad luck.
We probably smelled horrible.
It must have felt a bit surreal to be probably surrounded by some pretty clean cut kids that just you guys are straight off the trail.
And they're all superhuman. Like they're all so, I've never seen people do this kind of stuff on a scooter that I saw people doing at Woodward Park City.
For real.
I didn't even know some of that stuff was possible.
So was this part of the motivation to change the route, guys?
No.
I don't remember. I think we realized afterwards that, damn, we're going through Park City.
Okay, like, awesome.
We're taking a zero for sure.
Nice.
Yeah. But, yeah, that was one of our little side.
Yeah. Moab was a side mission as well.
Yeah,
well,
yeah. Arches National Park.
We chilled in Moab. We did, like, 3 zeros in Moab.
Yeah, Moab, sick. Highly recommend.
Cool. Okay, so, obviously, a zero means no miles.
No riding.
Right? Yeah.
So, though one of our zeros, we still got on the bikes and like went into Arches National Park.
So it wasn't really.
And it was like a full long day of riding.
Probably did like 60 miles
for
Arches.
That was one of the best days though. That was so much fun.
We like took the bags off. Yeah. Some of them.
Oh, that must feel very freeing.
Oh, so sick.
Was it ever.
And just such a beautiful ride through the park. Just awesome. And we did like 3 or 4 hikes.
Yeah, good number. Yeah.
So that's why it mostly felt like a, like those were the first hikes we did.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the only hikes we did.
Yeah, I think so.
But yeah, we just biked through, ripped a bunch of hikes.
Yeah.
It was sick.
Wow. Yeah. So were you guys mostly tenting at night?
Yeah.
Mainly tenting.
Yeah. Like 90% of the time, maybe.
90%.
Yeah.
Sometimes we'd like pull up to like some tiny town in the middle of nowhere and like, you know, sleep in some like park bathroom or something, but
sure,
just because they're like warm and you don't have to set up a tent, it's just easy. But I'd say 90% tenting.
Nice.
Couple motels,
warm showers.
Warm showers. Are you familiar?
Yeah, sure, but please explain.
So I mean, for anyone who's not, it's just this app for bike packing specifically, and it's this kind of network of either like current people that are touring or people that maybe tour sometimes but they're not right now, and those people open up their homes for people passing through on bikes to, you know, crash there, because sometimes when you're passing through towns on bikes and you know you're not loaded and you can't just like get some hotel, that can be a really nice thing. And some people just kind of do it casually, like every once in a while, you know, set up a tent in my backyard, or we have like a guest room or something. But some people are pretty serious, like they make a whole hobby out of it, like just professional hosting bike packers.
Shout out John. He was our first warm showers host in Butte, Montana. And I think he said we were like his 350th warm shower clients, I guess.
But it's free.
He was pretty
pro. It's free. Yeah.
It's totally free. Yeah.
And they feed you. You get the shower, laundry, for the most part.
Yeah. Okay.
Had my own bedroom, king size bed.
What?
That was nice.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
It was super sweet.
Yeah. I guess you don't really know what you're getting into when you show up. Or and is it kind of like, do people get rated and stuff? Like
And most people will say in their little bio, like, to what extent they can host, and like some people, you know, they are just like, you know, you can set up a tent in my backyard, and that's still great. Like in Moab, we were just tenting in this in this dude's backyard, and we didn't really like chill with him at all, but it was
I kind of felt bad about that. We were in this guy's backyard for like 3 days, barely talked to him.
Didn't really ask
if we could stay another night.
We kind of did, but it was totally chill. It was just like, you know, just hang out in the backyard, you know, if you need anything, just let me know.
Sure.
That was calm. Different but strokes. Then the other side of it is like John, where we just like hung out with him all night basically, and just like talked, and he had two really funny dogs. He had one really funny dog, Flipper, because like one of his arms was half the size that it should have been.
Speaking of
cute little thing.
Non-human things, other than the the llama ranch, did you guys run into any wildlife?
Ooh.
That was... No, we didn't, unfortunately.
We did.
Okay, like some stuff, but, you know, I was expecting some grizzlies.
Yeah, no
some
grizzlies.
Moose.
No what? Grizzlies.
Maybe yeah. count yourselves lucky for that, Stinky.
Yeah, I'm not too mad that we didn't run into any grizzlies.
Yeah, no, in the moment, it's the last thing you want to run into for sure. But now that I'm safe back in Vancouver,
now
it's
that
like,
you're
oh, would have been sick
to
see a grizzly. Then I could have told it on the podcast, on the radio show. But I really want to see a moose, too. That's like a lifelong goal of mine. I put myself in these situations to see a moose all the time. Never seen a moose. They're hiding from me.
One day.
There were a lot of days where, you know, you're just looking around and you're like, this is moosey vibes. Like, and then you're just spending the whole time, like, looking out into the woods, like, playing I Spy with these moose, not seeing a single one.
They're probably all watching.
Yeah, we do have, I've got two pretty funny wildlife stories. I mean, so once we got into the desert, we were, like, maybe a week into just desert sort of territory. And I just had this thought. I was like, oh, this just occurred to me. We should be shaking our shoes out in the morning
because
there's scorpions
here. Totally.
And they like to go into like confined little dark places that smell like feet, I guess. And, you know, I just had that thought. And then obviously every day after that, I was still forgetting too in the morning. Because, you know, you're like, you wake up and you're kind of groggy and you just put the shoes on. Don't even think about it. But it had occurred to me. And then one day, you know, I put my shoes on, walk around, you know, go pee, drink some water. I was up and walking around for like a good minute. Go over to Tavish's tent, just to be like, yo, you know, I'm up.
Yeah.
And then I went over and then what did you hear?
Okay, yeah, well, Bryn was always telling me, shake your shoes out, you never know when the scorpion's coming. And yeah, that morning I'm in my tent, I'm like, still naked, and Britton's like right next to me. He's like, oh yeah, like we gotta do this today. I'm like, whoa, what? And then like, you know, 15, 20 seconds later, I get the update that there's a scorpion in the shoe.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I had no idea what was going on out there.
Yeah.
Could have been anything attacking. Could have been a moose.
Yeah, grizzly or something. No, but I just felt this shooting pain in my foot. God. And then I looked down and it like crawled out the ankle side of my shoe. And I was just like, oh my God. So the crazy thing is my shoe was on for like a whole minute, like more than a minute.
You were
and it was just in there. And I didn't even feel it. That's what was weird. Because it was no tiny scorpion. It was a decently sized scorpion. So I don't know how that works.
Oh, man.
And then the last day on, or second to last day, we were like right close to the border. And it was, it was kind of around sunset. And you see a lot of snakes on the road, right?
Okay.
That's like a common roadkill
find,
sure. Right? See a lot of dead snakes on the road, way more than you see alive snakes on the road, right?
Yeah.
So we saw this like big old rattlesnake, like
big old thing,
big old rattlesnake, probably like 5-6 feet long.
Oh God.
And it wasn't moving, right? It was just in the road, like not moving.
Yeah. Thing.
So I kind of bite by it, and then I was like, "Yo, that was a giant rattlesnake." Stop. Go back, and. Wasn't moving, and I was pretty close to it. But the weird thing was it wasn't flattened at all.
Yep.
It wasn't like, it didn't really look like something had run over it. So I was like, that's weird, but it kind of looks dead. I mean, I feel like if it wasn't, it would have been, you know, slithering either away from me or towards me, right?
Yeah.
Right? I didn't know. So come to find out, I was telling this story to someone else afterwards, and they were like, yeah, rattlesnakes play dead. I mean, spoiler alert, but rattlesnake, I didn't know that.
No.
And then I waved Tavish down and I was like, yo, this big old rattlesnake, like, I kind of think it's dead, but I'm not sure. And we were like, you know, like throwing little pebbles near it, like poking it with a stick, and it wasn't moving. It like fully wasn't moving. I like hit it with a little pebble, like poked it with a stick, and it wasn't moving. And we're like, okay, I mean, I guess this thing just like died in the road or something. And this is like the biggest snake we had seen. So we like go up real close. Tavish took a flash photo.
Yeah, yeah, deemed it safe. I was right up by that rattlesnake. I took like 4 flash pictures. Like, oh, no, that's not the one. That's not the one. Yeah, like, and I think I gave up. And yeah, we're like 2 feet away from this thing. And then it does the whole rattlesnake.
Well, it like lunged at us. It like, yeah, like kind of, well, it was like a pump fake kind of, but it, like,
yeah.
Made the rattlesnake sound.
Yeah, and we were just like, whoa!
Like synchronized, made the same sound Brian made when the scorpion came out of his shoe. Yeah. Couldn't bike away fast enough. I couldn't find my pedals. I was like still right next to the rattlesnake for like 5 seconds.
Yeah, because we've been chilling with this thing for 2 minutes.
Oh, man.
And then it just, yeah, that was crazy.
Got the heart going for sure. Yeah.
Whoa, that's intense.
Yeah.
Okay, so a little bit of exposure to the more dangerous side of the desert.
Saw a roadrunner. Running on the road,
mm-hmm.
like
from the cartoon, and they look exactly like it does in the cartoon. I didn't even know that. I didn't even know that it was a real bird.
Are
no,
you
yeah,
serious?
Look it up right now. It looks exactly how it looks in the cartoon. It didn't do like the leg spinning thing. But
all right, yeah, I'm seeing a brown bird with. Oh yeah, they look speedy.
And it's got the little mohawk
thing
and the
blue.
Tail feathers.
Yeah.
Wow. Saw some coyotes as well. Didn't see the coyote and the roadrunner at the same time. But saw like 2 stoats. That was kind of cool.
Bunch of elk.
Oh,
yeah,
cool.
Bunch of elk.
Nice.
Bunch of elk. Some cool birds.
Several thousand deer and cows, I'd say.
Yeah. Ooh, these really sick longhorns.
Oh, yeah.
There was this one ranch we were passing through that just had these crazy looking longhorns.
Like,
I'm talking like 6 foot.
I saw them
long.
In a video.
Yeah.
Of yours. Yeah.
It's
like
an intro.
I didn't even know that existed.
Yeah.
Me neither. Yeah.
That's
I had no
crazy.
Idea.
Yeah. They're really cool.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're just passing the halfway. This is usually when I introduce some other auditory stimulation. So we're gonna play a tune. Do you guys want to rock paper scissors over who goes first?
Sure.
No shoot.
Rock paper scissors. Oh, okay. Yeah, there we go, Tavish.
Boom.
You're gonna go first. So Tavish, the song you've given me is "Don't Smoke the Seed." Surely it's a metaphor for something that's not smoking. Why did you choose this song?
I chose this song because I was told to choose a song about 10 minutes before we got on air here.
Yep.
And I panicked a little bit.
Awesome.
But it's a great song.
Great.
And I definitely listen to it a lot on the hard days.
Yeah.
But I can't say it has all too much deep meaning.
That's okay.
But
sometimes
great song.
That's the best songs. Okay. Here we go. "Smoke the Seed" by Michael Palmer. Hey, I said, smoke it every day. Boy. Smoke the weed. Don't smoke the seed. 'Cause if you smoke the seed, you're going to kill the breeze. Hey. You're going to kill the breeze. Whoa. Smoke the weed, yeah. Don't smoke the seed. 'Cause in this time, it's all we need. Whoa. It's all we need, yeah. Some say Kali. Some say Sensi. But this your time. We're not here with Fadi. Whoa, we're not here with Fadi. Hey, this weed come from our father's land. And some of them say it's the healing of the nation. Whoa, what a smooth vibration.
Yes, what a sweet sensation. Way, smoke it, I say. Whoa, smoke the weed. Don't smoke the seed. Cause if you smoke the seed, you're going to kill the breed. Whoa, you're going to kill the breed. Hey, smoke the weed, yeah. Smoke it, set speed. Cause in this time, it's all you need. Whoa, it's all you need. Yeah, smoke it, I say. Smoke it every day. Some I say, it's your Mario. Whoa, it's your Mario. Yes, but smoke the weed. Smoke it at speed. And don't smoke the seed, cause you will kill the breeze. Whoa, you will kill the breeze. Hey. This weed come from our father's land. Some of them say it's the healing of the nation. Whoa, what a cool vibration. What a smooth meditation. Smoke it, I say. Every day, some say, smoke it, I say. Just smoke the weed. Smoke it, set speed. Smoke the weed. And don't.
The world of education this Saturday, October 26th at the Vancouver Convention Center. You can meet with top universities, graduate schools, and professional schools from Canada and around the world. Register online to stay up to date and check in at the fair to be eligible for prizes, including a free flight to anywhere in the world on Air Canada. Explore your future with Study and Go Abroad this October 26th by registering now at studyandgoabroad.com/Vancouver/ studyandgoabroad.com/Vancouver/
What a lovely Vancouver summer night. I can't wait to sit by myself at the beach and look at my phone. Huh? What's that?
Man, what are you doing? Get over here and come jam.
Wow, what a lovely assortment of musicians. What are you guys doing?
This is E-Studio. We come together and build connections over music. No musical experience needed. Just come socialize and build your confidence playing music if that's your thing.
Wow, this is so awesome. Now I have a real-life connections with Vancouver's international community of musicians and creatives. Thank you, E-Studio. E-Studio is an international jam group where we celebrate music from all around the world and play together. Follow us on Instagram at estudio.cafe. estudio.cafe.
Okay, let's see here. Blend equal parts science and stories. Add a few shakes of music and soundscape, and wrap it all up in a big question. How can we see this more than human world in a new light and take part in shaping a healthy Anthropocene? Catch Future Ecologies every Sunday at 8 a.m. on CITR.
Hi there. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from UBC Vancouver campus located on the unceded ancestral and traditional lands of the Hunkaminim-speaking Musqueam people. We honor the ancestral and ongoing care for this land by the host nations. Media practices are often rooted in white gaze, and we recognize that it is our responsibility to shift our approach and move towards radical empathy. While we broadcast from UBC Vancouver campus, our listenership extends to the unceded lands of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations, and beyond. We encourage you to check out native-land.ca, that is, native-land.ca, to learn more about whose land and territory you live and work on, or may be visiting. Thank you.
Welcome back to Outdoor Pursuits with who was here before? Myself, Jane Quinn McDonald, Britton Helfert, and Tavish Young. We're going to jump right back into our discussion about the epic 2-month-long bike trip.
Yeah.
Border to border, Canadian border to Mexican border. We're going to do a little worst and best moment. So I think let's start with a little worst and best meals, and then we'll dive into worst and best days of the trip.
And maybe we can preface the worst and best meals discussion with just a discussion of our average food situation.
Sure, yeah.
You eat a lot.
I bet.
On a trip like this. I mean, if I had to guess, 6,000 or 7,000 calories a day. I mean, do you think that's reasonable?
I'm not great with the whole counting calories thing, but like it was a lot. It was a lot for sure.
It was probably like 2 or 3 times what I'm normally eating.
Yeah.
And you're also just like constantly eating. Like it's like we would stop for meals, but in between that, you're also just kind of like shoving carbs down your throat.
The feed bags.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like you pretty much always just have something sitting there that you can just like pour into your mouth while you're riding. And some of the staples were oatmeal, obviously.
Like morning or like morning, noon, and night?
Just morning.
Yeah, okay.
But which I got sick morning. Of it probably like halfway through or like 2/3 of the way through. I got off the oatmeal.
I miss the oatmeal. I love the oatmeal. That was my motivator to get out of bed every morning.
Yeah. Yeah, Tavish never got off the oatmeal. Because you start to covet, like, the more rare finds.
Yeah.
Because, like, there's the core kind of Quaker canon. There's, like, the maple brown sugar. Yeah. There's the apple cinnamon. Yeah. There's the, what is it, cinnamon and spice.
Yeah.
But then there's, like, some more niche ones that are only, like, every once in a while that you find. So there's, like, banana nuts. What? There's, like, blueberry, blackberry.
Oh,
there's,
man.
Like,
gets pretty crazy.
Strawberry something or other. So that it kind of, like, you get to become a connoisseur at the oatmeal.
Yeah.
And you, like, find little ways of modifying it. Like, Tavish would get bananas sometimes, like, that you can do if you just, like, have them for a day or whatever, and then next morning. And then mac and cheese, obviously big staple. Pasta became a big one for me. Like pesto pasta was a go-to. Tuna packets and sardines were also a big staple. Yeah, on the sardines and the tuna packets, heavy. Tortillas and peanut butter and jelly tortillas.
Nice.
And specifically, like, the stripes thing that you get where it's the 2-in-1 in the same jar.
Sure.
Peanut butter and the jelly together all swirled up. That's a hack, majorly.
Nice.
And snack-wise, you got to have salty. You got to have occasionally sweet. So, like, Cheez-Its, pretzels, Cheetos.
What would you say your best and worst was?
Meal? Best meal. I feel like I have a good answer for this, but I can't, it's not. Ooh. Sometimes you can find these, like, tortellinis that are shelf stable, and, like, they're just in a little, just, like, bag, like any other pasta would be. And I didn't know tortellini comes like that, but get these little tortellinis, get some nice pesto, with like some Parmesan. And oh, okay, yeah. And then you go to a gas station, mm-hmm. and at some gas stations they have pizza, and then they'll have like the little packets of Parmesan and red pepper flakes. So you get some of those, and then you get some tuna that's like flavored according to your preferences, you know, like lemon, dill, or whatever, or like garlic and herb or something or other, and throw that all together. That's a pretty good meal.
That was your best meal, Britton?
What?
Out of the meals we cooked.
Well, the meals, like the camping meals. Yeah. Like, we would go into town. Okay. We'd go into town. What? That's, like, good. That's good cooking for camping. Yeah.
I was like, what? No, it's really good. I thought we were talking, like, the grand scheme, like.
We're talking about meals we bought.
I can appreciate
maybe those giant burritos at that saloon.
Yeah, those cowboy appetite burritos were really good.
And we got this fancy brunch one time.
That was stupid.
It was like ridiculously expensive, but it was good.
It was like the Jam Cafe of Victor, Idaho.
Oh, man.
It was just so expensive and so bougie, and we did not need that. I needed oatmeal.
Yeah. And I got this burger with ice cream on it Eureka, Montana. And that was really good, actually. They're obsessed with huckleberries in Western Montana.
Okay. Oh,
yeah. So it was like huckleberry ice cream on a burger.
Damn.
It was good.
Making me hungry.
Worst meal? I got really sick of Nutella.
Okay. That's...
I think we both got really sick of Nutella. I got one jar. And I had it like twice. Somehow after that I was
couldn't
do it.
What we did, was it just Nutella tortilla?
Peanut butter Nutella tortilla. Okay. Or just sometimes just like Nutella tortilla. Mm-hmm. But I really, you know, because you don't just want to be like carrying around this heavy jar of Nutella and like doing nothing with it. But that's what I was doing for like a month. It was like sitting in my food bag, just never touching it.
I think I got Nutella one time and it was in Montana. And it was in my food bag, which was kind of on my back rack. And when we were bombing down a hill, said bag got stuck between my frame and my wheel and just shredded my whole food bag, including the Nutella. So I had like sprayed Nutella all over my spokes, wheel, brakes, frame of my bike, under of my seat. And keep in mind, we're in like the densest populated area of grizzlies in the whole world. So they're going to sniff me out. Britton's like, yo, like, if you're not going to wash that bike, you're keeping that thing a kilometer away from me tonight. Like, we are not camping with that bike. So we got into town, which was Whitefish, Montana, like, right late, because that was a huge day. That was a really big day. And I was like, okay, I guess I'm going to go to the public washroom in the park here and, like, take my bike apart and, like, precisely clean every little bit of Nutella off my bike, which took... I would say like an hour, maybe.
Yeah, good bet.
If not more, because I was terrified of grizzlies the whole time in Montana. I'm not taking that risk. Like
sitting there with a Nutella bike.
Full bear attracted. That doesn't work.
Oh, man. Oh, so Nutella was not.
Nah, it did us. For the boys. Did us wrong. Okay. I would say.
Well, sounds like you made up for it with the tuna.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Tuna pasta.
Yeah. That was
yum yum.
I would say my worst meal was Taco Bell in Evanston, Wyoming.
Oh.
Absolutely annihilated my stomach.
Oh no.
It was awful. But I could also say that best meal may have also been Taco Bell.
Because when it goes right.
We would hit the family of four meal deal with maybe some extra burritos and just go ham in the Taco Bell.
Yeah.
Gotta do what you gotta do. Okay, so on this same best and worst trend, let's talk about, you know, you can preface with maybe a typical day, mm-hmm. and then best and worst days.
Cool. Typical day, wake up, sort of, I guess, when it gets bright out.
Mm-hmm.
Roll out a bed, you know, stretch out. Set up the stove, mm-hmm. get some water, maybe go filter some if you need to. I would say, breakfast comes first. and then packing up mm-hmm. comes second.
Nice.
Packing up, it's kind of a like a whole process, but you get pretty quick at it.
Yeah.
Yeah, oatmeal pretty much every morning.
Mm-hmm. Instant coffee.
Mm.
Oh, yeah, but we only really got on the instant coffee
late on in the trip, yeah.
But we should have been on it earlier because it's good.
We would also, I don't even know if you clock this, but we would never talk in the mornings. Like, yeah. We would never, there was never, like, a good morning or, like, a discussion. Not yeah. in a rude way, but, no. like, it just, I don't know. I think we naturally just realize it's nice to just have that kind of quiet time yeah. in the morning while we're packing up. So we just, like, eat in silence and yeah. pack our stuff up. And then once you get going, yeah. start chatting and whatnot. Yeah. But very, very it's peaceful kinda, time yeah, of the day.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah.
Waking up around, like, sunrise most days, I'd say. Mm. In the second half of the trip, yeah, because you got to beat the heat.
Mm-hmm. But right.
First half, we were sleeping in for sure.
yeah. Yeah. First half, we were, like, it was funny, man. Everyone... We kept hearing from people, and, you know, given this was people that were just on the GDNBR, mm-hmm. but, like, Montana's the hardest state. It's so not. like, everyone says that, and I don't know why. I guess because if you're going southbound, that's just when you're, like, getting used to things and your mm-hmm. body is adapting. Mm-hmm. But it's so not the hardest state. It's the easiest one.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's not easy, but, okay. For the most part, the gravel's really good.
Yeah.
You know, there's no really heinous riding surfaces. Most of the climbs are, you know, sustained, but, like, pretty gradual, I would say. Like, mm-hmm. nothing.
Not much hike-a-bike.
Yeah, not a ton of hike-a-bike. Good weather. And, you know, maybe we just got lucky, but the weather in Montana was great.
Yep.
We perfect. Didn't get rained on a single time in Montana. You know, just pretty good.
And you're going into towns, like, every day and a half, mm-hmm. 2 days in Montana, so yeah. there's really no, like, panic when it comes to getting water or food. Whereas you get down south and it's yeah. 40 degrees and there's no gas stations and there's no natural water, so you really got to think about these things and, yeah, you got to be more aware. It got a little bit stressful at times down south, but,
yeah
we got babied in Montana for sure. It was pretty chill.
Average day, I mean, probably 65 miles, I would say, is just, like, a standard
mm-hmm.
day. That's but it really long. Depends on terrain.
Yeah.
Because, you know, yeah, like, big climbs can definitely slow you down.
Yeah, totally.
Our longest day was 100 miles.
100 miles. Holy hit a century.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, just because that was one that we felt like we had to do.
Yeah, did that coincide with the worst day of the trip?
Oh, no. That was one of the better ones.
Just yeah, that was a sick one.
A cool little accomplishment.
Yeah.
And we kind of planned it out, like, to try to go for that on a day where the riding wasn't, there wasn't anything, like, really
yeah.
horrible.
Passes or something.
Yeah, like, obviously, like, there's always going to be some climbs and stuff if you're riding through mountainous territory for 100 miles, mm-hmm. but there was nothing crazy.
Yeah, no.
But we were riding into the night for like 3 hours.
Yeah, we started at 5:30 a.m. maybe. Yeah. Ended at like 11:30 p.m. It was a long day.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
Were you guys wearing like padded shorts or what was the deal?
I was, yeah. I went bike shorts.
Okay, yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I went running shorts, no underwear.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Good on ya. Commendable.
yeah.
It's just, like, raw. You know?
Yeah, but honestly, I mean, I would say we had pretty similar situations. Like, I think no matter what you're wearing, like, the first 2 weeks,
yeah.
first 3 weeks.
The pad to fights.
Are going to sure. suck.
yeah.
Just no matter what. So, like, your body's going to have to get used to it. And before it gets used to it, like, it's going to kind of suck. At least, like, butt-wise, mm-hmm. it's going to kind of suck.
Yeah.
But, like, second half of the trip, our butts were pretty dialed.
Nice. Yeah. That's mm-hmm. the way calloused, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
One
yeah.
big callous on the bush.
Anyway, did you have, like, a memorable worst day?
Yeah.
Tavish does for sure.
Okay, go for it.
Yeah. So in Utah is just east of Castledale, I believe.
Yeah.
We're camping kind of this like deserty kind of terrain. Woke up sick, just sick as a dog. And it just got worse throughout the day. And, you know, barely able to bike. But we biked for some reason for about 20 kilometers or so, 30 yeah. kilometers. Yeah. Until we were kind of in the middle of the desert, like not really close to the town, and had to give up right then and there. I was just so ill. I could not move on anymore.
Oh, no.
And then proceeded to spend 16 to 18 hours just like curled up in a ball on the floor of this like random outhouse we found in the desert, just like concrete floor, just like not eating, not drinking, just... Yeah, like I said, shaking, barely sleeping, couldn't even like think about looking at my phone or anything. And then kind of as this is happening, we're like running out of food and water because Britain still got to eat and drink. So next day, I guess, we made the decision to backtrack back to Castledale. And I think anyone would agree, when you're feeling that sick, the last thing you want to do is hop on your 50-pound bike and ride through the desert. So that was pretty awful. Like that was no joke for sure.
Yeah.
But also kind of while I was doing that bike ride, I was like, okay, this is rock bottom. Like every day after this is gonna be so easy. Like so there's kind of that silver lining there, but oh God, I never want to feel like that ever again. And it lasted another 4 days or so.
God.
That's why we stayed in Moab for like 3 days, because I was like physically destroyed.
Oh man.
And yeah, once we got to Moab, which is maybe 2 days after that, I just completely drained my body, like past the point of exhaustion, if I'm saying that right.
Yeah.
And we got to a gas station like close to Moab where I was just like walking my bike on flat ground at this point. And I kind of just like burst into tears at that point. I was like, oh my God, I've never felt this awful. And I'm just like middle of nowhere right now. This sucks. But yeah, you got to have that rock bottom.
Holy.
Makes
Did
everything else easy.
Did you ever find the source?
No, my first thought was like, oh, maybe it's altitude sickness. Because like the day before we were at, you know, 10, 11,000 feet. And then we descended really quickly. But the symptoms weren't really lining up that well.
Yeah.
And like
and
you
it
get.
Stuck around.
It stuck around. And you get altitude sickness when you're at altitude.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it wasn't that. I think I just picked up some kind of bug, I guess.
Yeah.
A bad.
And I think when you're working that hard, like your immune system's probably kind of on the back burner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
When you're just eating mac and cheese every day.
Yeah.
So yeah, I got did dirty in Utah.
Yeah. That one was gnarly too, because when we were like in that, when it was really bad and you were just like curled up on the floor of that outhouse, we were in the middle of this like, I don't know, national like just wilderness area or something in the desert.
I don't know. Yeah.
Oh, the San Rafael Swell. And we're just kind of on this back road, like this dirt road. And we didn't see like a single car all day. Because that's the kind of situation where you're like, all right, like we'll flag down a truck, get back to town, like get you some medicine, like get a bed to sleep in or something. But like there just wasn't anyone out there. So we were really just on our own. So that was kind of like, you know, it was getting towards the point where I was like, all right, I might have to test out the old SOS button on the Garmin.
Yeah, that's intense.
Yeah, that was one of the sketchier situations.
If we were kind of further out in one of those, like, four-day periods where you're not really going through towns like that, we maybe would have had to hit the Garmin.
Oh, yeah,
It was
sure.
bad.
Yeah, like, we were pretty lucky that, like, we weren't right next to a town, but, like, it was
close enough.
It was reachable.
Yeah.
Given, you know, like half a day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that was worst day, worst 3 days ish.
Yeah,
that's
no
it.
Doubt.
Yeah.
The best day must have seemed all that much better.
There was a lot of best days,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, it's really
I can't
hard.
Really pinpoint
yeah,
one.
Totally.
Really hard to
Here, well,
pinpoint one.
We're coming up on the hour here, so maybe
oh,
just
true.
A couple words on what it was like to reach the border of Mexico.
Yeah, it was sick. It was everything. That we, I think, hoped it would be in Mexico was exactly what we needed.
Yeah.
Just ripped tacos and
yeah.
margaritas and
chill.
One more.
Chill.
Yeah, basically just did like a food tour
yeah.
of Nogales.
Someone stole like 2,000 pesos out of my pocket in Mexico.
Oh.
So, but no, it's all good.
Maybe they needed it more.
Yeah. Maybe.
Who's to say?
Yeah, and we had our fill
yeah.
on tacos and everything. So it was, yeah, it was great.
Did it feel like finale? Was it like, okay, like we did it? Or was it just that the journey was the objective?
It was more like when you like sit down in a chair and you're just like, ah. you
yep,
know?
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, we got to Mexico and we still had to ride like 80 miles back to Tucson the next day.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it wasn't over. Like, nice, we're at the airport.
Yeah. 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 But it was like,
and also everyone told us, like everyone we met was like, don't go to Nogales. Don't cross the border.
Really?
You're going to get robbed.
Yeah.
So you're kind of on edge a little
bit.
Yeah, sure.
Was,
maybe.
Oh, man.
It was chill. It was like,
yeah,
it was
fine.
Great time.
Yeah. Would you guys recommend this to others?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I would say definitely
with
go there
some
if you're in the area.
These two are fit young men, so make sure you're fit for the journey before you decide to take this on.
Oh, right.
Honestly,
yeah.
Like, we kind of trained for the trip during the trip.
Okay.
We weren't that fit.
Yeah, we didn't
okay.
even. Yeah, I hadn't even
okay.
touched a bike in like 4 months before doing this.
Well, so. You heard it here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say, though, if you're going to do the Western Wildlands route, don't do it at the time of year that we did it. Because biking through the desert in the middle of August, man, probably not the right time to be doing that.
Yeah, yeah, I see that.
No water, too hot. Do it some other time, but do it.
Yeah,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you both for your time. I'm going to make sure that there's not another show playing and then we can play your tune. But if there is,
cool.
I'll have to just add it to the queue.
Cool.
Awesome.
Okay.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you guys so much. And we're actually back for one more little ditty.
We're back for one more song because Tavish got to play a song, so I should too. this song, I kind of considered this to be like my secret weapon on the bike trip. So I would mostly only listen to music when we were climbing.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when I like really needed that kind of extra bit of juice, I would cue this one up.
Here you go.
Hold me tight.